Supporting WHYY, the Rutgers-Camden MBA degree allows for specializations in critical areas such as finance, international business, marketing, entrepreneurship, and others. Evening and Saturday classes are held at the Rutgers-Camden campus and Camden County College. An information session is on Tuesday, June 23rd at 6 p.m. at Camden County College in Cherry Hill. Details at mba.rutgers.edu or 856-225-6452. Rutgers School of Business, Camden. Expect more. Be more.
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Ahead this evening, our blogger Solomon Jones weighs in on why there's so much opposition to construction of a new prison. First up, there are at least a dozen Republicans officially running for president, and many more are openly exploring a bid for the White House. Some are in Philadelphia for a three-day conference making their pitches to GOP leaders in the region. WHYY's Katie Colinari reports that the stakes are high.
Only candidates polling in the top 10 will be part of the first televised Republican debate in August, so they're working hard to stand out from the crowd. This morning at the Northeast Republican Leaders Conference, former Pennsylvania U.S. Senator Rick Santorum focused on appealing to blue-collar workers who sat out the last presidential race. Santorum says they need a Republican nominee who understands.
The importance of workers working with their hands and their heads and not talk down, as I think a lot of our politicians do today, talk down to the tradesmen and to the machinists and to the folks who make things.
Former Hewlett-Packard CEO Carly Fiorina wants to free Americans from what she called webs of dependence on government.
Leadership's job is to challenge the status quo, and the highest calling of leadership is to unlock potential in others, and now we need a leader who understands how to unlock the potential of this great nation.
New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, who's expected to announce a presidential bid before the end of the month, pitched himself as a leader on foreign policy and national security, noting his time as U.S. attorney after 9/11.
Now, of all the people who may enter this race for president in 2016, you are looking at the only one who has actually used the Patriot Act, the only one who has actually investigated and prosecuted terrorists.
Christie also took shots at presidential hopeful U.S. Senator Rand Paul, who successfully led the charge to let the Patriot Act expire. Katie Colinari, WHYY News.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller.
Once again, innocent people were killed in part because someone who wanted to inflict harm had no trouble getting their hands on a gun. At some point, we as a country will have to reckon with the fact that this type of mass violence does not happen in other advanced countries. It doesn't happen in other places with this kind of frequency. And it is in our power to do something about it.
That's excerpts of President Barack Obama's statement yesterday following the murder of 9 attendees Wednesday night at Charleston's Emmanuel AME Church. Let's again gauge public attitudes on gun control with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Frank, the president also said that he's had to make statements like this too many times in response to mass gun shootings. Is there a typical trajectory of public response right after these horrific events take place?
From time to time, when we have measured gun control attitudes just after something happens like has just happened in Charleston, we do see a spike, but typically it comes back down again. So I would say, looking at the long-term pattern, there's some basic fundamentals in Americans' attitudes about gun control that are not fundamentally changed, at least to this point, when these types of incidents happen. For example, after Newtown, the tragic shootings in Connecticut, support for stricter gun laws jumped up by about 14 points from where it had been. But then it settled back almost to where it had been before when we measured it last, which is last October.
So in the general sense, it goes back to whatever baseline we've observed over many years?
That's right. And if you look at that baseline, the long-term trend has been for a decreasing percent of the American public to favor stricter gun laws. There were points back in 1990 when we had almost 8 out of 10 Americans who said we need stricter gun laws. Throughout the 90s, typically it was well into the 60%. Then in the decade of the 2000s, it fell down to the 50%. And then actually more more recently, it has been in the 40s. Our most recent update was 47% who said that we need stricter gun laws in this country. The rest said they should stay about as they are now. So clearly, long term, there has been a movement towards Americans saying, no, we don't need stricter gun laws, rather than the opposite, which is exactly not what we would predict, or of course not what President Obama and many others would think should be the case.
Are respondents asked to weigh in on that general term, gun laws, or is it as specific as, say, background checks?
Well, we do ask, and other pollsters have asked, a lot of specifics about background checks and about being able to sell guns at gun shows and things like that. Our question simply says laws covering the sale of firearms, should they be made more strict, less strict, or kept the way they are now? That's the way we originally phrased it back in 1990 when, as I mentioned, almost 8 out of 10 Americans, given those options, said we need more strict laws. Fast forward to today, or when we last asked it a few months ago, it was 47%.
Now, here's an open-ended question that Gallup recently posed. What's good and what's bad about the U.S. economy?
The responses to those questions, Dave, certainly shows the pivotal role of jobs in this country, because people who look both negatively and positively at the economy talk about jobs. When we say, good news, what's positive about the economy, 23% say, well, because the unemployment's down, we have more jobs. Other people say, kind of tautologically, the economy's getting better. Businesses are doing better is another response. There are more opportunities now. There's a low interest rate. That's good for the economy and so forth. But on the flip, when we then say, all right, what's negative, what's bad about the economy, what's not going right, people say the lack of jobs and unemployment. So it's kind of like the glass half empty or half full when people look at the job situation. Other negatives are big business, corporate greed, inequality. Those types of things certainly come through on the negatives about the economy, as well as the Americans saying that we need better wages for jobs in our employment economy.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight. Taking a look at this evening's headlines, award-winning entrepreneur, philanthropist, and Comcast founder Ralph Roberts died last night at the age of 95. When Comcast acquired NBC Universal in 2011, Roberts said he never could have envisioned that the company would grow so large.
Together, I have no doubt that our combined creativity will give rise to a wonderful array of new products and services. We should all be truly happy about that. This is an extraordinary day, marking the creation of an extraordinary company.
Roberts served on several boards in the region, including that of the Philadelphia Orchestra and the Greater Philadelphia Urban Affairs Coalition. In 1998, the broadcast pioneers of Philadelphia inducted Roberts into their Hall of Fame. He's survived by his wife, Suzanne, and four children. Philadelphia's Cradle of Liberty Council of the Boy Scouts will no longer prohibit openly gay adult leaders. The council announced its decision today, nearly 1 month after National Scouts President Robert Gates urged a new policy saying, quote, "We must deal with the world as it is, not as we might wish it to be." Jim Popita, president of Cradle of Liberty Council, says he's not sure if national leaders will follow suit.
Information that has been in the news now for about a month, that National is considering a change in the policy as well. Although, as you must realize, it's a lot more difficult to change a national policy, which has to be sort of suitable for the entire country, than it is to change a local policy which is suitable for local conditions.
In 2000, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the Scouts have a constitutional right to prohibit openly gay leaders. The Cradle of Liberty Council later tried adopting a non-discrimination policy, though that was quickly rescinded, and that set off a long fight over the rent-free headquarters the council had built on land owned by the City of Philadelphia. Eventually, the Cradle of Liberty Council moved to Wayne and settled the case. 82 degrees, partly sunny skies on Independence Mall. It's 6:15. This evening's forecast, partly cloudy, low around 69 degrees. The weekend starts off partly sunny, clouding up, tomorrow's high 82. For Father's Day, anticipate showers, thunderstorms, otherwise cloudy, humid, Sunday's high around 86. For Monday, plenty of sunshine, high in the upper 80s. Tuesday, Intervals of sun and clouds, high around 86 degrees. Again, 82 degrees, partly sunny skies on Independence Mall. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY-FM. Thanks for being a YStream supporter of WHYY. I'm Dave Heller. Let's take a music break with the Baiman Brothers. This is Shelter Island. The Baiman Brothers with Shelter Island. They're not actually brothers, and none of the members are named Baiman. The trio consists of David Nickturn on guitars, C.J. Vanston on keyboards, and Christopher Guest on mandolin and guitar. Yep, that Christopher Guest of Saturday Night Live and Spinal Tap fame. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on Pledge Free Y-Stream.
Devereaux, backed by more than 100 years of service to individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities and half a century of working directly with children and adults with autism, now provides autism diagnoses for children. Devereaux offers timely appointments in as little as 4 weeks and uses the ADOS-2, the latest of autism assessments. For more information or to request an appointment, devereaux.org. Devereaux is proud to support WHYY.
Abington Health supports WHYY and understands that a lung cancer diagnosis can turn your world upside down. Abington Health's lung cancer team is dedicated to putting your mind and your world at ease. With advanced diagnostics like endobronchial ultrasound and important treatment options like stereotactic body radiosurgery, plus minimally invasive surgery and genomic testing of tumor tissue, Abington Health can create a treatment plan just for you. Learn more at abingtonhealth.org.
Flashpoint Theater supports WHYY and presents the world premiere of Hands Up, 6 playwrights, 6 testaments, on stage through June 28th. Commissioned by the new Blackfest, 6 emerging playwrights bring to life their feelings on the dangers of being black men in what we like to believe is our evolved American society. Flashpoint presents these stories in all of their honesty, confusion, and hope. Directed by Joanna Settle and featuring live music by Il Dutes. Tickets at flashpointtheater.org.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. A controversial bill in Philadelphia City Council was pulled this week that would have set in motion the purchase of a $7.2 million plot of land for a new prison complex. Newsworks blogger Solomon Jones says he hopes the plan gets shelved for good.
This week, City Councilman Bobby Heenan decided not to advance a bill that would have authorized the city to spend over $7 million for land that could be used to build a prison to replace the aging House of Correction. He did so under pressure from a broad-based coalition consisting of neighbors and advocates, prisoners and activists, educators and school children. He did so after hearing from the people. That is as it should be. It is the people, after all, who elect our representatives, and in doing so, we place in them our trust, that they will echo our voices rather than overshadow them, that they will honor our wishes rather than dismiss them, that they will place at the forefront of every decision the interests of those who elect them. And in this case, the people believed that we should put education before incarceration. We, the people, could not accept spending upwards of $500 million to build a new prison when we couldn't spend one-fifth of that to fully fund our schools. We listened carefully to the argument that prisons and schools are funded from two different sources. The school budget consists of operating funds, which pay for salaries and the like. The money to build prisons comes from capital funds, which are borrowed against municipal bonds. But at the end of the day, we rejected that argument because of this simple fact. Municipal bonds are repaid by taxpayers, so the money for both prisons and schools comes from us. With that stark reality in mind, we the people believed that schools should take priority over prisons, not only because it is morally right, but also because it is fiscally right. Spending $12,000 annually on a student is a far wiser investment than spending 3 times as much on a prisoner. And make no mistake, students who fail in school are more likely to become prisoners. Most of the inmates in our city's prison system don't perform at a high school level. They end up staying in the House of Correction for months, not because they've been found guilty in a court of law, but because they are too impoverished to pay bail. That's the case for too many of those in our city's prison system, and that's wrong. But here's the good news. Councilman Heenan's decision to hold the land purchase bill will give us time to focus on finding alternatives to imprisoning those who've been accused of nonviolent offenses. We can start by placing a serious focus on the MacArthur Foundation planning grant the city received this year. The grant's focus is to develop alternatives to imprisonment. There's currently a group comprised of criminal justice stakeholders working on that competitive grant. If that group can assemble a proposal that reduces over-incarceration by changing the way we think about and use jails, we won't need a new prison. because the foundation will give us up to $2 million annually to put the plan into action. It's time for us to do what the people have demanded. It's time to put books before bars. I'm Solomon Jones.
An eyewitness to Philadelphia's early days and the birth of America will be remembered this weekend as part of a Juneteenth celebration commemorating emancipation of African American slaves. WHYY's John Abbott reports that tomorrow's remembrance of a slave known as Alice.
Alice was said to have lived to 116 years old, witnessing the birth of Pennsylvania and Philadelphia's early years. Alice's life story also provides a detailed look at slavery, says retired Temple University history professor Susan Klepp.
She puts a human face on the institution of slavery. I mean, we know about slavery in the North, but I have almost no individuals who we can look to understand how slavery affected someone over the course of a very long life.
Though in servitude all of her life, Alice achieved unheard of status for a slave by managing Dunk's Ferry in what is now Beverly, New Jersey. Klepp says she supervised fisheries that supplied ships leaving Philadelphia, even though as a slave she was denied any chance to learn how to read and write. Klepp says Alice worked in a tavern and at age 8 was tipped a few cents for lighting William Penn's cigar. She also was a communicant at Philadelphia's Christ Church and may have met George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, Robert Morris, and Benjamin Rush, among others. Dr. Audrey Henry, a member of the Riverfront Historical Society, says Alice was outspoken about wanting to be free.
Alice, of course, never had that opportunity because she died well before that. So she lived her entire life in slavery. So we're going to bring her life story forward on this very important occasion.
Klepp's talk begins Saturday afternoon at 1 at St. Stephen's Episcopal Church in Beverly. For WHYY News, I'm John Abbott.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. We had help this week from John Ahrens, Brett Rader, and our intern, Maggie Freeland. Our news director is Eugene Son. At the helm this week, Al Banks and Adam Staniszewski. Joyce Lieberman is our radio engineering supervisor. Our chief content officer is Christine Dempsey. Chris Sutulo is WHYY's vice president of news and civic dialogue. You can listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Delaware Valley University supports WHYY. With DelVal's Master of Arts in Counseling Psychology, students develop the skills, knowledge, and clinical experience needed to work in the lives of others. Graduates are prepared to apply for the Pennsylvania Licensed Professional Counselor credential. A specialization in social justice or child and adolescent counseling can help make a difference in the community. More about a Delaware Valley University Master of Arts in Counseling Psychology is online at delval.edu/grad.
Businesses and organizations can reach WHYY's loyal and receptive listeners through underwriting. Messages on WHYY reach among the most educated, professional, and culturally engaged individuals in the region, your ideal audience. To learn how your company can benefit from underwriting, on air and online, call Penny Jardines at 215-351-3310. That's 215-351-3310. Or visit whyy.org/underwriting.